podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap. It's Neil Atkinson with Ian Ryan, Jay McKenna and Phil Blundell. We are recording this on the Sunday, immediately after Liverpool's result against Chelsea. A 1-1 draw, not a bad result, but in the context of the match with them going down to 10 men, that is a thing. Also, the other reason why I've said we're doing this on the Sunday is that we will have a chat about transfers on this. If something breaks in between when we record this and when it goes out, you understand the context, at least, of that conversation. And we'll have a little bit of a chat about the ongoing minor issues with people trying to get in and out of the ground. All of that is to come, but we will start off with Liverpool 1, Chelsea 1. And Ian, before the game, a few Liverpool supporters I think might have took a draw, just get out of it, first one, tough one, etc. I wouldn't have, but I understand those who would. It becomes harder not to think of it as 2 points drop because they go down to 10.
100%, it's context, isn't it? So when you see the decision to send off James, you think, well, Liverpool hold all the cards here, but it kind of plays into Chelsea's hands in terms of they're able to put everyone behind the ball and make it really, really difficult. And you know, you can have a conversation about, you know, if it was 11v11, what would have happened? We'll never know. But they made it really difficult, but they're a good side, Neil. And I think I was having a little think about it before coming in terms of things that Tuchel's done. And looking at two of the performances yesterday of two of Chelsea's players, and actually going a bit further back as well into kind of last season, but he's made people like Anthony Rudiger not necessarily the liability that he could be every now and then. So I always thought with Rudiger, he's two good games in three and he'd do something mad in the third game. He seems to have got him really, really concentrated, really focused to the point where now he looks like a top-level defender. I thought he was really good yesterday. Backs against the wall, I'm not sure normally he's the kind of fella you want if your back's against the wall, but he played really well. Same with Alonso. Alonso's a bit of a laughing stock at times. And I know why he likes him, because of his physicality. But again, it looks like he's done something to him where he's made him a better footballer. And I think, again, back to concentration.
What I think there is with all these, Ian, and I'll come back to you on this, because I think it's the way in which the game goes. They're so compact.
Yeah.
So none of these footballers are ever exposed for more than a split second. It's very rare that any of them, you know, it's easy to say, drive at them, create a 1v1. It's very difficult to actually get a 1v1 against any of them. That's at 11 or 10 in the game yesterday. All the way through, there's always someone who's about to back them up.
Yeah.
And I think that's what he's done. That is so excellent. I've seen those make Jorginho look daft in the past. You know, there was the clips going around before the game of Robertson running away from him and all of that.
Yeah.
You can't run away from Jorginho now because there's no room to run into. There's another lad right behind them straight away. And I think that's what you're seeing there. And those players, they're all keeping each other honest. They're all looking after each other. And they do deserve enormous credit for it. They look so well drilled. They look looked after.
Yeah, they do, yeah. And I think that was evidence. And as I say, when it went down to 10, I was a little bit concerned because I thought, well, this is not going to get any easier now because they're just going to be really, really passive. And they'll pick the moments, and they did, to be fair, Chelsea. I mean, you've got to say, obviously Liverpool are kind of pressing forward, but they have two half-decent chances. The one with Kovacic where Alisson makes a decent save. I mean, that would have been a killer blow if that had gone in. But I also think, you know, we ended up with a situation where, you know, Trent sees a lot of the ball, and there's that kind of triangle right-hand side, but what ends up happening, and I've not looked back on this because we're doing it Sunday morning, but it seemed to me that Mo's starting position was very, very far right, and I think you almost wanted Mo Salah a little bit closer to goal yesterday.
As it starts, Jay, I thought first and foremost, atmosphere was absolutely on it. It felt like people had come for this. Yeah. You know, it felt massive. And Liverpool do start fast, and it's a remarkable level of intensity, I think. I saw someone who supports neither side sort of tweet around half-time saying this feels like a Champions League quarter-final to the third game of the season, but there was that level of absolute commitment and intensity from both sides. I think both Chelsea know we're going to try and start fast, no shadow of a doubt, but we still do it, and you know, it was about as intense a game as I could. It felt more intense than any game I watched last season. Any game that was behind closed doors, this felt like a much more on it football match.
Yeah, this was, it was almost like just kind of picking up where we left off from Liverpool when the season we won the league, when we were last going in the game. So it felt like we were just picking back up from where we were, like we were on it, we were on a roll, Liverpool were going to try and steamroll the teams. And I think that probably Chelsea knew we could do that and probably thought we'd do that because I just think they were, even when they had 11 men, they were so organised. I haven't really seen much of Chelsea in under Tuchel, but he's kind of he's clearly just got them very well organised. And I think that that first half, if Liverpool were, you know, their goal is, I know this sounds strange to say because it wasn't like a fluke, but it felt fortunate.
Yeah.
Because it didn't feel like, you know, Chelsea should be taking the lead there. And I think if Liverpool just had a bit more of a cutting edge up front, you'd have been looking at, if you'd gone in there, seen Liverpool winning 2-3-0, we'd have come away maybe and thought, that's a first half that we've seen Liverpool do loads of times to loads of teams. We've had a spell where we just take it away from them. I wonder how much it took out of Liverpool though, because we looked very, very tired. Second half, I thought, very, very leggy. And not just kind of because it was difficult to break Chelsea down. I just think the players looked really tired. Even players that, you know, the left-hand side, I think, looked tired. But even Salah and that, you know, they were stopping, they were taking a blow. And it kind of, even from 70 on, and it just looked a bit like, you know, did we just fly out of the blocks too much? Might we have just used too much energy? But I think the crowd played into that. My mate said to me at half time, it's like the crowd have forgot what a big game is like. And we kind of like wanted it every single time. And it's like, you know, Liverpool usually play within themselves when they're playing like that. They know where their limit is, and it just felt maybe we didn't a bit, but we did fly out. It was good. It was enjoyable, and you get caught up in it, but you look back and you might think to yourself, you know, might we have just kind of expended a bit too much energy there?
One of the things from 1920, Phil, that we used to say, you and I sit quite close together in the ground, and we'd have a bit of a chat, and often we'd be saying, started a bit slow for me. But they move through the gears, so it gets to about 20 and then they take it up a notch, and it gets to 30 and if they needed to, they take it up a notch. And that's what you'd see. And I remember often, you know, doing review shows and stuff like that, going, sometimes maybe it might be worth just starting fast and blowing a team away. Look what City do and all of that. I think yesterday that is one of the marked differences from even 18-19, certainly from 19-20, is I think Liverpool felt, and you do wonder if the managers in part thought, bank holiday weekend, R5, first big game back, you know, all the stuff that does matter. And Benitez was brilliant at using the crowd in that first season of Europe when we get to Istanbul, knowing that if we start fast, these will be with us 100%. And I think that that might have been in the mindset, Phil, and you do get to see the flip side of it, which is their goal then comes at the worst possible time. You're just beginning to struggle for breath a little bit, and then they score, and it absolutely saps you.
Yeah, I think we were probably at the period where you're just going to sort of dial it in a little bit for half-time and sort of slow the game down and go, you get back in at half time and you can work things out. And you've seen in the last 2 or 3 years that Liverpool are very good at going in at half time, getting the analysts in, working something out and coming out after half time and having a real go first 15. And then that completely changes. But what we did also do after half time is we did have a go the first 15 in the second half was the bit we most looked like scoring. It sort of felt like from 45 to 65 that there was no way Chelsea could hold on for 45 minutes. I think I said to my dad on about 52, I went, they can't do this for 45 minutes the way they were playing. But the problem was they didn't have to do it for 45 minutes because, as Jay said, we couldn't keep it up for 45. I think
so your point there, Phil, just to again contextualise that, there's the Salah effort from the cross that comes into the back post from Robertson on the left hand side, that's on 66. Liverpool, neither side, but Liverpool don't have another shot until 80. And that's 14 minutes there where I think that's what gets Chelsea home. I think that 14-minute lull, Phil. There's a mad period where he's trying to get Thiago on for about 6 minutes.
The only time the ball went out for about 5 minutes was for them to have a corner and you can't bring...
Yeah.
You can't do it then, can you?
No, he was trying to... But that I think that's your point, isn't it, Phil? Yeah. That from sort of from the start of the second half, after about 5 minutes, about 50 minutes to about the 66th minute, Liverpool at least have, talk about the quality of them, 9 attempts. They don't have any for the 14 minutes that follow.
Yeah, the game, I think from the start almost, was played basically on their terms in respect of, they were basically going to go, well, there's some space there, you can play football there, but there's no space here, or here where you would quite like to do something with the ball. And it made it very difficult. I think that the circumstance that we found ourselves in was the last team in the entire footballing world who would want to be in that position against. I don't think there's anybody who could do what they did better yesterday. Even to the point where they still managed to have a centre-forward who was keeping two of the centre-backs occupied, because under normal circumstances, one of the centre-backs could probably go, I'll play 5-10 yards further up and add a little bit more. But you couldn't really just leave Lukaku one-on-one on the halfway line, I didn't think.
It reminded me of Mourinho, Chelsea, which is a compliment to this, you know, the early Chelsea on this, because Drogba occupying that same position, the big threat up front, a release if you need it. They've got midfielders you can play if you give them a chance, and we did in the second half at times. So and this is something we've got to remind ourselves, Chelsea are a title rival. Do you know what I mean? This isn't like a... If this was Burnley first game of the season, I'd be furious and I'll talk about Tottenham and that. But this is Chelsea, and they knew, particularly when they went down to 10 men, they knew what they had to try and do to get on that game.
You're allowed to not beat a good team. It's perfectly normal and fine that you just go, okay, they're quite good at football. We've had a hard one. I also think the one thing that made it a little bit easier for them as well was if that was off the back of a midweek game where they played a Champions League game, it might even have been harder again. So,
But the flip side of this, Phil J, is this is why it is still two dropped. You've had 45 minutes there in a one-on-one game. You know, I'm not looking at Chelsea and looking at all their quality. I'm going to just sort of presume in my mind, certainly at home against the bottom 10, they're winning all 10. Away, they're winning at least 8. You know, that's what I expect from them. That's 54 points. This is an opportunity to take points off them. So and to not just to add 3 to us, but to ensure they don't get 1.
This is points dropped. Anyone walking out of that ground is thinking points dropped because you're thinking Liverpool could have... But more, I think, because we're thinking Liverpool could have, should have done something different second half. But I also then wonder, and I think we'll get onto this, I think you mentioned it before on the review, is we didn't feel like we had a change to kind of try and do something different second half. I think that Firmino, and maybe Klopp had this in his mind, Firmino coming off and having to replace with Jota first half, maybe it's a change he'd like to have made with 60, on 60 or something like that. I think that dramatically changed. And it just looked like, because of the way they were, they were very well organised. I think once we got tired, I think Chelsea also grew in confidence. I think for that first 15, 20 of the second half, they're thinking to themselves, I'm not quite sure we can keep doing this. And then we dropped off and I don't think they might have seen us dropping off. I think they might have been thinking, oh, we can keep doing this and we're all right now. We've just got to see another 5 minutes and then another 10. And then before you know it, you're in the last 10 and they're thinking, Sam, we've only got to do 10 more. And they can rally themselves a bit more, which they seem to do as we rallied again. So I think it's points dropped, but I do think there is a wider... There's context why it's points dropped, but I think there's also context that second half early in the season. I think if that game's in 10 games time, it's very different.
Yeah, I think you have to say it's 2 points dropped. There's no getting away from that. You know, Liverpool will have fancied themselves, and rightly so, against 10 men. But, you know, sometimes these things do turn out to be harder than you think. I think, you know, you've mentioned a couple of things there, Jay. I think the substitute thing, I've seen a few people say, well, you know, it highlights the need for another attacker. I mean, I want one anyway, but I don't know whether yesterday's the perfect example of that, because he is the manager's hamstrung a little bit by what happens in the first half, because the minute Firmino goes off, there's one sub gone, and you could tell Robertson was blowing, so there's another one gone. Doesn't leave you much else. And Thiago always felt like, I mean, you forget when Chelsea go down to 10 men a couple of years ago, or maybe a year ago, at Stamford Bridge, he brings Thiago on there because he obviously thinks he can affect the football match because obviously he's that good on the ball. So I think yesterday it's difficult for the manager, but that said, I do want another attacker, because I think there'll be games you'll look at that bench and think, well, if one of your front three is out injured and you're starting all three, then who is the attacker who's coming off the bench? And I think yesterday, and Jay alluded to it then as well, your left-hand side, fucking hell, it was frustrating, that left-hand side. And Robertson's probably got, well, he has got an excuse in terms of his first game back. And maybe when Neil was talking leading up to this game about, has he come a little bit too soon this game? Perhaps it has for one or two, because I think you see, you know, Henderson again, maybe was it the shift to the left-hand side of the midfield that affected his game possibly? Like the Harvey Elliott thing for me, I thought going into the game, and we were talking about potential selection kind of options for the manager, Elliott wasn't really in my thoughts because of the balance in the midfield that I thought he'd want. And this is not to downplay Elliott, by the way, I thought he was great, but I'm thinking Fabinho's going to be deepest. It's going to be Henderson, right side, and then Keita, because he's got the rhythm, he'll play left-hand side. And I felt like it offered them maybe the most balance. Now, obviously, he's put Elliott in, and I thought he did really, really well. He's one of our better players. But I do think that shift maybe doesn't necessarily help Henderson. But that said, Harvey Elliott, I mean, you can't help but be excited by someone who, at that age, is doing the things he's doing. And I've tried to err on the side of caution a little bit with Elliott and almost manage my own expectations. You know, but if Harvey's watching this, lad, you've got to meet me halfway here. You can't be coming in playing like you've played the last two games, you know what I mean? Because expectations are going to go through the roof because he looks that good. And there's one thing he does early on. I think it's in the first 15 or 20 where he gives it away and Chelsea spring on us. And you think, if you have a certain mentality, that changes the rest of your game, because you could go into your shell and think, well, I don't want that to happen again. But he doesn't do that. He wants the ball. He demands the ball. He'll take the ball in any kind of area you want. And I think that says to me that he is one hell of a prospect.
Yeah, he's playing like a man. He's playing like a man that's been around the block. And people said that in Burnley and stuff like that. There was lads walking off the ground. There was a couple of lads who must be in and out Harvey Elliott's age too. Like, lads, Harvey Elliott's playing football at his age and we're just walking back the pub for a pint kind of thing. and he's fantastic and all of those things. And I think he'll be great and he's got a talent, but that position isn't for him, I don't think. I think he's getting in the way of Trent and Salah, and I think we're using that side an awful lot more than we would. And I agree with you on the balance. It looked like at times Robertson and Mane didn't have a pass to a midfielder. That kind of Elliott was giving them on that side an awful lot. Now, I think you kind of... I agree with you. You know, you think when Ronaldo would be out there was a pass to a midfielder that could pass it on and make triangles. They struggled with that. I think Mane was off it. Robertson first game back, I think, affects his fitness and his levels. But on the other side, and I think he's a talent, but it just feels like if you're going to play Elliott in midfield, he needs to be a bit more central. Maybe just floating a bit more in between the three. Because Mane dropped back at one point in the first half and kind of took his position, and Elliott went wide, and Mane just played it more as kind of someone to give the ball to and take it off, whereas you play it to Elliott and he's out in that position. And I think you're right, Salah's very far wide, Trent is kind of waiting for the ball, they're all very close in a triangle. It's like these lads, when it works well and when they're playing lovely, you know, football and the 1-2s, it's great. But then there's times, so it's like Chelsea, I think, almost knew that was going to happen then, and Chelsea just covered it with men all the time, and they just knew likely to go down the side because they were our biggest threats. So I think there's just maybe something in changing where he plays. That's not a criticism of him, it's more, do you make the other team react then to moving him to the other side, even if it's not his best position?
Yeah, I think there was a really nice little pasture play, second half, where I think we were basically, there was a real succession of one touch passes that just failed. But I think the midfield, when Elliott is in there, it probably needs to be more of a two and a one than a one and a two, doesn't it? I think but it's finding that thing, and they are still learning quite a bit about him, obviously, because he's 18, and they're also trying to mould him to a bit about what they want. And I think everyone was expecting him to go off when Thiago came on, but then when he took Henderson off, you're like, yeah, that probably actually makes more sense than
I thought, you know, on the tiredness point, and I want to talk about the transfer thing. I want to talk about another attacker. But I think I agree with Ian in terms of when he's already made that first sub, that he's the enforced change. Yeah. I was looking at Fabinho and Henderson for about 5 minutes before he changes it, and both looked shattered. And I felt like he's got to do one of these two here because they're both in the middle of the park. And then by the time he does Robertson for Tsimikas, that he also wanted to do for ages and the ball wasn't going out of play, I was looking at Robertson was right in front of us and Robertson had to go off. Yes. I mean, he just had to go off.
Literally, so he makes the change, Robertson over it to pass thing to Mane, and he literally turns around on the touchline and he shouts for Tsimikas. And even Tsimikas is surprised. He's like, I'm on the left touchline on the cop, and he looks, he's pointing at himself going, me or him, and he's pointing at Chamberlain. He's like, no, you.
Yeah,
straight away. And he just made that decision and stayed in his cop because he knew.
I think it's easy to say with hindsight, but I think he probably should have started Tsimikas, shouldn't he, really? Because he was playing well. It's a big game. Robertson's fitness is definitely not 100%, because ultimately Robertson was supposed to be out until after this international break. And all right, fair enough, he's got back quickly, but I think sometimes you just got to go, okay, maybe this isn't the best thing to do. And I think, as I say, it is hindsight, and I've got no problem, because I wasn't saying this before the game, but having watched it, I think you can say the manager's probably got that one wrong.
I'll come back onto that, Phil. Talking about Elliott in the position that he starts, and I think he does move a little bit during the game. I think he's moved a little bit at 1-0. I think he comes a little bit narrower at 1-0, and it's almost like Firmino and Elliott are quite close together, and the two wide lads are there at that stage. But in general, what surprises me, not just with Elliott, you can talk about changes from the bench, but I'm really surprised he doesn't shuffle the midfield and the front three. I'm really surprised we don't get 5 minutes, 10 minutes of Mane on the right, Salah through the middle, Jota on the left. He could swap Elliott to the left-hand side to play with Mane and to play with Robertson for a period in there and have that left option, so Elliott can use his left foot over on that side, and he could move Henderson to the right a little bit more. Liverpool decided they were playing the way they were playing, stuck with the plan, believed in the plan, were really patient around the plan. And we always act like patience is great, but there are times where maybe you're better off shaking it up a little bit. And I was just surprised at no point do any of these players get shuffled around, even just a tiny bit on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's interesting is the plan was the plan with 11 men, and the plan was still the plan with 10, which doesn't feel
Chelsea's
right.
Plan changed significantly.
Exactly. So they
took Kante off.
Exactly. There was no spacing behind Alonso anymore, which is what we were trying to exploit first half. And we still carried on sort of in the same way, like trying to overload on their left-hand side and really focus the ball down that side of the pitch and try and get Salah in behind and try and get Elliot on the ball. And the amount of times we worked the ball out wide to Trent as well when they were sort of sat in. And to be honest, I think we still wouldn't have scored now regardless if we'd have put players on who didn't play for us and stuff like that. So I think it's hard to sort of take a great deal from a long-term point of view out of yesterday. I just think it was frustrating ultimately is what it was, wasn't it? It was just very, very annoying. And the good thing is that we only have to play them once more this season because that's not going to be...
But
I'll be happy to play them in a Champions League semi-final because we'll be in a Champions League semi-final.
What was interesting in the second half, with the changes they made, everyone in Army was just like, this is it, Chelsea now. Chelsea know what they want to do. Chelsea know what their game plan is. They weren't trying to win that game. If they got a chance, Sam, but they were not interested.
It was like they were ahead on away goals.
They had a plan. It worked, and they've got experienced players, and I think that helped Rudiger. I think there was times he got shouted at by some of his players because he just literally launched it along. But it's like, no, he's literally doing his job. He's executing what he's been asked to do. Defend. Doesn't matter how well you do it, how badly you do it, defend. And that's all they've done.
It's a bit of a shame, incidentally, that the penalty instant isn't either 5 minutes earlier or 5 minutes later. Because if it's 5 minutes earlier, their heads are completely... Yeah. They're gone. Yeah. They're completely gone, and they get basically 30 seconds, didn't they, before they go off for half-time and the manager can reorganise them and he can
calm them down, do that.
He can talk to them. He can say, right, you're doing this. And he gets 15 minutes to say, you're doing this, you're doing this, you're doing this. If it's 5 minutes later... It's the second half. He's stood on the side of the pitch and he's got to reorganise and it's chaotic and it's the best possible time for that to happen to them, and that's just it's a bit obviously out of control, and I'm not going to go, well, wish it hadn't have happened, etc., etc., but it would have been helpful from our point of view if it could have happened just a little bit.
I think lots of people will have been like, 2 points dropped, but I didn't get the sense people coming up the ground, furious, 2 points dropped. I didn't get the sense people are angry. I get the people feeling like, oh, missed opportunity, rather than like, I hate them.
I think that's fair, Jay, and I think there's something else, and I'll pull Ian in on it as well. For me, there was also a little bit of coming out of the ground. There was also a weird little bit of sense of occasion. Just watched a great footy match with two great teams. Mm. Aren't they excellent? They're worthy of respect. The Reds are back. We've all just had a great time. I think if that's under normal, non-COVID-y, we've not been to a match for ages circumstances, there might have been a bit more of, for fuck's sake. But I actually think there was a bit of people just sort of, and I'm not against this, by the way, I'm not against people enjoying themselves and enjoying a sport and occasion, do you know what I mean? It's part of, theoretically, what we pay for. It's not meant to be all driving us mad and creating bile. But, you know, there was to me a little bit of that in there where I think everyone was just a bit like, we're watching quality here. We haven't got to watch quality. We've lost quality. Mm-hmm. We lost in our lives. We've just got all this back. Isn't it great? Yeah. So I do think that did play a bit of a part in it. And I think that there's almost a bit of an element of that, I think, from both teams. I think Liverpool kept and fair play to Chelsea, and I don't think Liverpool are wrong about this, Ian, but I think Liverpool kept a lot of respect for Chelsea in that second half, the idea that these could just nick one, you know, so we've got to be really on it. So even the, you know, if we were playing, I'd say, any of the bottom 15 and we have got a half against them, firstly, they fall even further back than Chelsea did, and secondly, the other thing that happens is that we just decide we'll play 1v1 with your front man and trust that we'll sort that out. They weren't prepared to take that chance from Lukaku, and I thought Mount was excellent.
Yeah, I think that's all really fair, and I think what Chelsea were really good at is just giving you a reminder every now and again that if you leave the back door open, we'll be fucking straight through it. Don't worry about that. And they almost do it with the Lukaku one. What I think, again, I think Alonso, back post, heads it down. Again, another reason he plays because he's so tall compared to Chilwell. He's probably a better footballer, but I think he likes the physicality, as I mentioned before. And Lukaku gets a decent connection. I think Matip gets in the way of it.
It's a good block.
And it's a very, very good block because you wonder where that's going if he doesn't block it. And as I say, there's the Kovacic one where he's almost virtually through 1-1. As I say, I've not really seen it back, but it looks a decent save. And that's just a little
bit... Just enough.
Say, hang on, if you go too far here, we will take advantage. And I think, there's not only a level of respect from the players, but I think your point before, Neil, I think I came out of the ground thinking, well, to be honest, you've got to have respect for the opposition. And I know I've picked up one or two of their lads, and that's not to say they haven't got weakness, because they clearly have. But because of how they are...
Christensen was good.
Yeah, and I think he's a good player, actually. And it's funny, because he wasn't always in favour with Tuchel, but he is now. And I think how they are managed and organised by him, I think, you know, broadly speaking, Liverpool's an educated crowd. We've watched loads and loads of different managers who've been able to come in and set up different ways. You think about Benitez, how difficult he'd make it be in certain games. I think we can appreciate a good setup, a good tactical setup, where you come and do a little bit of a job where you've got to go into the lines then a little bit. You've had that knock with the red card, and it's a red card, by the way. People can debate it, but no, that is the rule.
It is the rule. Yeah.
So you can talk about all you want, whether it's fair or not.
If you want to complain about the rule.
That's not the conversation. It's a red card. And I understand from a neutral's point of view, it does massively change the game, because it's from one hell of a football match, that first 45, by the way. It does make you feel alive. I was like, Christ, this is unbelievable. What a game of football. We're in
so fast.
The second half, you're thinking, fucking hell, anything could. But then that does change the game. And as you said, Phil, if that happens on 40, 35, 40, my God, I think Chelsea's heads would have completely gone, because Liverpool get a penalty. There's a red card. I think two get booked as well, if I remember rightly. Yeah. Mendy gets booked, and then is it maybe Rudiger gets booked as well?
So there's
loads going on there, and Jorginho is all over the ref, and you can just see like it's bubbling and bubbling.
The rake of the penalty spot, by the way, is my favourite moment of the whole match. It was incredible. He looked at the situation as it was unfolding, saw the referee come, and ran at the penalty spot.
The best bit about it was he does it whilst everyone's having a big kickoff. He's separated himself from the kickoff and gone and done it. It's fantastic.
He sees the kickoff, he thinks, I know what I'll do here, and Robertson, everyone else is kicking off. Robertson spots him, and Robertson's like, I'm not having this. So Robertson charges over, and it was like, I think these are two of the best five teams in Europe, Phil. And what I loved about that was it was so remarkably Sunday League. It couldn't have been more Sunday League. They've got a contentious pen. There's a bit of a kickoff. I'll go and hack at the pen spot. It was tremendous. It really was.
The keeper, after the penalty's gone in, that Sunday League as well, randomly decided to volley someone. He could have been sent off seriously.
Did he hit Henderson? Was it?
Yeah.
Because Henderson
basically looked like, I can't figure out whether he went to just kick the ball back into the net or he went to get the ball, which
I think he wants to get the ball.
I don't really know why, but whatever. But and then Mendy just leathers him, man. That could have been a red card.
That would have been really funny if that would have been a red card incident. Well, I think if that had been a red card, the Chelsea players might not have got off the pitch at half time, or they might have just got off the pitch and gone because they were that furious. But no, I just loved is these lads. They're all on like six figure salaries on a weekly basis. They're the best in the world at what they do. It's a pen, is it? I'm going to kick fuck out the pen spot. It's just absolutely glorious. On the left hand side, Jay, I think there's a problem. I think they haven't got the link man that they've had in the past, or even just recently with Keita. You know, this isn't just talking about Gini Wijnaldum. There isn't a link man for them there in midfield, because Henderson just wants to come in and come narrow. He pulls that way, and they are a bit more of a two anyway, Henderson and Fabinho. But I also just think neither of them play well. And I think that in the end, it's the thing that actually most hurts Liverpool. We can talk about the tactics, and you can talk about intensity, and you can talk about refereeing. But I feel as though Robertson and Mane, if you were marking them out of 10, you'd be generous if you were giving either of them 6. And if either of them had played 8, then I actually think Liverpool win the game.
Yeah, they didn't seem to do much with the ball when they got it. Crossing was poor, when getting the crosses in, kind of Mane, when he cut back, it was just always a pass into the middle. Not kind of like, yeah, they just didn't look the threat. Whereas when Salah was getting the ball, or Elliot or Arnold, you thought something might happen here. And that bore out in the stats, but certainly it was the way watching it. But that's where I think it comes to your point before, Neil, about changing the players, is do you just change the man? Do you make their defenders think of somebody else to defend? Them not thinking, right, I've got this fella. Do you just remove them from it? And we did that for the last 5. We put Salah central. Salah goes over and tells Jota to go on swap positions with him only. But you think, you know, could we have put Elliot there? Could we have sent Elliot over there and said, you know what, go and bother them. Go and bother him. Go and just see what you can get out of him. See, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Or just even be a bit more freer amongst almost putting Elliot as part of the front three and letting them just figure it out themselves for a period of time. Particularly when when you bring Jota on, those players are all largely similar players that want to get the ball and run at people. So, you know, I think you could try that. When you then can, I don't think that helps Mane, you know, that he's just stuck out there and it's just not working for him and he's just not on it. But it does make you think. And I get your point, the Firmino changes it, yes, but you're looking at that now and thinking, well, who is who is the change? Because Jota is seemingly now the change for Firmino. He's not a change for any of the three. He's seemingly, it's him or Firmino and how Klopp wants to set up. And it'll make people think, well, who is the change for one of the others? If you've already made that change, if one of them gets injured, what do you do? I'm surprised we didn't just try Chamberlain. I'm just surprised we didn't try someone like that yesterday. Even
I wonder,
and put Elliot in the three.
I wonder in hindsight, Jay, that the Thiago change, if he would probably now have rather have done Chamberlain. I haven't seen what the Thiago change does, because I think the idea is Thiago's going to get it and move it faster, but they're so compact that what we weren't doing, I didn't think, was just... I understand why we're not committing one, because you're aware that if you commit one, they're so compact, there's another one right behind them. But maybe, just maybe, we'd have been better served to get Chamberlain through the middle of the pitch, just making runs and with and without the ball.
We were having a bit of joy with players getting space to take a shot.
From 22 to 25 yards.
Chamberlain likes that. So, you know, we in fact, we probably come closer to scoring from those. So I think you're looking at that and thinking, well, does he do something like that? Does he turn a man and think, right, out my feet, have a dig, and see what happens? You know, and we get corners and we look a bit of a threat sometimes from them. So I'm surprised he doesn't make that change, but that will be a future one, I think, where you can't extrapolate up from this, but I think people will be looking and go, okay, well, the same happens to us again. Who is our other attacking player we can bring on to offer something? Because I'd expect if Liverpool are drawing those games, even if you've made the Firmino substitution, if Liverpool gets a 60 and they're drawing a game like that against someone rubbish, I want two or three changes. I want us to try and win these games straight out, and that's going to require two attacking changes, most likely, I think.
There's something in that left-hand side, Ian, where, as I say, to go back to the poor performance thing, the one thing that normally you get from Robertson and Mane is really good, quick, interchange football that creates space. And it felt like every single time from both of them, it wasn't one or the other. The pass just went awry. One of them was bursting into the box and he passed it wrong side.
Yeah.
The other one would show a little angle off to the right, and this time the pass, you know, almost pass out of play in the end, because they think he's going to make the run there. And it was one of those where I felt it was all mental. I think physical plays a part, because as we said before, I think Robertson maybe just wasn't quite where we wanted him to be. But I think it became mental. It became this thing that they were second guessing themselves. And we know that this Liverpool side plays at its best when it's all instinctive and fluent.
Yeah. I think, as I said at the very start of this, I think Robertson has got the kind of excuse of it's his first game back. And, you know, I understand Phil's points about the hindsight thing, but I think if Robertson's looking good in training, then the manager's going to be inclined to use the best left back in Europe. He just is. Unless he's just showing signs in training of not being at the right level. So it's a tough one for him. I'm a bit worried about Mane, I have to be honest. I felt like at times last season, I'll have made the excuse about not having a crowd, because I think that does affect certain players more than others. They have a conversation about whether it should or it shouldn't, but I think it does. And I think Mane falls into that category. And I do think actually he's been a little bit brighter at the start of the season. But there are times where he does worry me a little bit. And I thought yesterday there was spells of the game where he's really bad. Like, he's really bad. And I love Sadio Mane. He's been one of my favourite additions under the manager. I think he's been sensational at times for this football club. And I'm not saying he's finished by any stretch, but I just think it reinforces the opinion of Liverpool could do with one more attacker, because I don't think it's a bad thing when you've got people putting pressure on some of these other players. And if you have got Firmino out, if he has done his hamstring and he's out for, say, I don't know, 2-3 weeks, you are left with just the three big hitters. And I don't think it's that wild to say the manager's not a massive fan of Minamino. I don't think he fancies him too much. We know Origi is not hugely fancied anymore. So that does lead you to the door of one more.
What worries me about Mane, to stick with Mane for a second, Ian, is I think you can mark Mane's bad performances with when he does his own heading. We've talked about Chamberlain recently, you know, a few different times, that sometimes you feel like Chamberlain just, he gets in his own head a little bit, but he doesn't quite escape it. I think Mane, you've seen him escape it in the past, but what concerns me, and I think the way in which he missed the fans was he found it almost like it made him do his own heading even more. And I think he was very, very tired, and there was other factors in play. But what worries me about Sadio is I think he can much more than Salah, who just lets everything go, is just about to be Mo Salah again in any given moment. I think Firmino has got some of that quality as well. I think Firmino likes to feel like he's going to score much more than we give him credit for. But with Mane, you know, I remember the bad run he gets on, going all the way back to the autumn of 2017, when he's dreadful for 10 games or 12 12 games. He's poor there last season for a long stretch, perks up towards the end a fair bit as Liverpool perk up. I just worry with him that he just gets in his own head to such an extent. And I think you saw it happen. I think Azpilicueta did his head in. He let Azpilicueta do his head in. Azpilicueta did his head in. And then before you knew where you were, he was just passing it badly. He wasn't moving it well enough.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to the frustration thing that people have said, because I think on paper, a 9 out of 10 Sadio Mane, as good as Azpilicueta's been, he takes him to the cleaners at this stage of his career. He takes him to the fucking cleaners. And I think Azpilicueta's been a great defender, by the way. It's not me downplaying him, but he's at an age now where if Sadio Mane's fit and firing, there's only one winner. And that wasn't the case yesterday. I think you're right about the getting your own head thing. And listen, you know, it is a mental side as well as a physical side of football. You have got to be strong mentally as well. And I think Sadio is, but you could see yesterday that frustration in his game. And there's probably a spell of maybe 15 minutes or so where nothing was going right.
Yeah.
Everything he tried went wrong.
Even the basics.
He was falling over. It just looked like he was a million miles off it. And as I say, hugely frustrating for him. And as I say, I don't think you can write him off, because we know he's good enough to come back. And, you know, Leeds next. That's a massive game, by the way. That feels like it has to be 3 points. And you wouldn't bet against them going into that game and maybe scoring. But as I say, I do come back to the point now where I'm a little bit worried about him.
Yeah, he doesn't cope with playing badly at all, does he, in terms of how he... Because, you talked about Elliot a few minutes ago about when he gave the ball away and how it didn't affect him. Mane does something wrong like that at the minute, and this has been like this for quite a while, but he does it wrong and he's like, it does his head in. Mm. And then it knocks his concentration, not necessarily concentration, but his sort of belief in what he's going to do next. And he gets in his own head and he does his own head in, and then the next thing you know, they've got a goal kick because he's just fallen over the ball or something. And it mostly looks like decision making to me, which I think is something that they can probably work with. And in the short to medium term, it'll be fine. I think it's more the, if it was, he was looking a yard slower,
yeah,
I would be more worried, I think.
Something always sticks in my head with Mane, and it's something that Klopp says, where he had the chance to sign him years and years ago. I think, I'm assuming it was when Klopp was at Dortmund, and I think he gets to the point where he meets Mane.
I think he was at the training ground.
And Mane doesn't, he says the reason he doesn't sign him because Mane doesn't believe himself that he's as good as he actually is. There's a self-belief issue. Now, clearly he's worked on that, and, you know, he's now elite level, we know that. But I think maybe there's just little elements of that creep back into his mindset where if it's not going right, it just unravels a little bit for him. Listen, we could be overthinking this massively, I don't know. But maybe there's a little bit of that where he just doubts himself a little bit. And it goes back to that thing Klopp said where he's like, if he believes in himself, he's going to be one hell of a footballer. But at the time, he just didn't believe in himself. And he's been on a massive journey since then.
But he's not helped yesterday, is he? I think that's the thing with this.
And he hasn't got Robertson playing at his best. And he hasn't got the inside option that he normally have. So there's loads of caveats to it. And as I say, you can overanalyze these things. But I just think when you take into account last season's performances as well, I think it's understandable that people might have slight concerns about his form.
Yeah.
I think then a couple of days left within the transfer window, Phil. There's a few points here. I would like there to be another attacker. I think we are one light. I think we've got to be careful not to act as though all of our rivals are all in remarkable nick in every single position. I'm looking at Chelsea yesterday, and the substitute, the similar thing happens to us. Kante has to go off injured, and then the next sub's a kid. An inexperienced player at this level in Chalobah to come and play centre midfield. It's him or Loftus-Cheek. They haven't got a ton of centre midfield options. We've got 8. Manchester City at the minute, their best number 9. Looks as though he thinks it's Torres. It might be he's us. They've got a lot of attacking options, but they haven't got a lot of stuff in the number 9 position. Manchester United's midfield should make people sick. So when you go through all of this, we've got to, I think it is important to frame that little bit of this. But similarly, you know, our second choice right back, is nowhere near as good as our first choice right back. We know that. We're all grown ups and that's all right. I think I'd love them to have one more genuine wide midfield attack option. I'm not that bothered if it's left or right. I think I'd probably prefer right, given the nature of Salah and the fact that he's using Elliot where he's using Elliot. But for me, you know, I think it needs to be someone. I'd like them to have a real look of getting someone in who's able to just be an extra man in this squad, who's happy to get and keep chalk on his boots.
Yeah, there's a primarily for stuff like Mane yesterday where you can go, okay, not working. Okay, maybe the numbers and the the Henderson being tied and Robertson being tied. Yeah. Might not.
Put that to one side for a second. We'll ignore
that. And it's more that you can go, right, well, it's not working for him today. We can get this player sound. He does that. It's just, I think it's it's really hard for us to sign players, let's be perfectly honest, because we're a really good football team. The player signs and knows that I'm probably not going to start every week. So then they're more like, well, maybe I'll stay here for a year and then I could get a better move in a year where I'm a first choice team for somewhere. And it plays around us quite a lot in terms of what we're after is not what a player might necessarily be after. And I think it's really difficult. We find ourselves in an odd position in this respect. I think it's safe to say that they are looking to sign people. I think it would be, they are, I don't think they're sat there going, yeah, we'll just not bother, which I think a lot of people think that's what happens when you don't sign someone. You don't just not sign someone because you can't be bothered trying to sign someone. So I think we've got to be careful to look at it that way. But I think an extra attacking option would make it a little bit better because we're one more away from Minamino being the go-to option, aren't we? And I don't think he looked bright in pre-season, but I don't think that's what anyone really wants to see, is it?
I just don't know what my thing on it is. I'm fine with Minamino, and I'll look forward to seeing him in the League Cup game, in all seriousness. Yeah. I just don't know what it looks like, why it's different and better. In that, I think he just wants to play number 10. And, you know, he's done stuff for us off the left, but he doesn't look like a natural option as a genuine sort of wide player. He's not that sort of... if Minamino was the level of ability he has and had a profile along someone, I'll use a name, to the example I use all the time, at the minute, like Ismaïla Sarr. If Minamino was as good as at being Minamino and as good at being Ismaïla Sarr, where he'd be a bit less good, I'd still be going, well, that's useful. I think the Minamino problem is I'm left going, I don't think this is very useful. Yeah. It's. I'm not saying whether it's good or bad. Mm-hmm. Is it or isn't it useful to us right now?
Yeah. I think he's almost wants to play where Elliot played yesterday, really, yes. As opposed to being there instead of Mane or being there instead of Salah. So he is an option, but he isn't.
I think Liverpool signed him to think, is this a player that we just take a punt on because he's so cheap?
Yeah.
And we stop someone else taking him and being proven wrong.
I think one of the things we signed him is you look at who Chelsea and City have sold. Some of their selling players, they never get near the team for 25 million quid and they're able to go, well, we raised this money. I think that's what the intention
was. He's ended up just sitting around the squad much more. I think there's a bit of me though that thinks if he wants to play Elliot so much, does he think Elliot's the other change for them in the free and signs another kind of a midfielder that can do what Elliot's done, another Naby Keita kind of player, someone like that. I do think this is where he ends up in a place, because I don't think Elliot's position is going to be in midfield long term. So I think it depends what Klopp's thinking long term. I think off signing someone in the three, I think that is a challenge, right, Phil, about saying, you know, you're not going to play much, but I think you may be signing a player that's like Jota. You're saying to someone, well, come in, prove yourself. I think you're good enough, and I think you could displace one of these three. And I think Liverpool are maybe saying that to themselves, of, I think you displace one of these three, and then we can get a fee for one of them in a year's time, be that Mane. Yeah. Most likely, or Firmino, but if not, and Salah was through the worst, then sounded Salah. And we've got a player that can come in and take his place, and we sign another player to replace one of the others because we've lost Salah. So it does feel like we need one. There's an element to this, and I know this isn't even just about the team and about useful. I think there's a real danger you end up in the same situation with centre-halves. One of them gets injured just after the kind of transfer window shuts and everyone catastrophizes it. And I think, you know, we didn't have fans in when Van Dijk got injured. Imagine what it'd have been like for fans in that ground. I think lots of supporters, you know, represent just a general supporter view. I think lots of supporters are looking at this thinking, I agree with you, they're not signing someone, but I reckon lots of people are sitting there going, how can we not sign someone? Man United have just signed a fella that they literally now don't even need. But they just signed him because he was available in Ronaldo. They've caused themselves untold number of problems. They could have, never mind, who has what shirt, who can actually play football. But I reckon people are looking at it going, well, who are our other options to win games? Because, I take Neil's point, we are weak in some of the positions that you would like us to strengthen in. But I don't think no one's looking at that yesterday. Even if it tactically makes sense, thinking, well, Tsimikas for Robertson is your change that helps you in a game, even though that can happen sometimes, they're looking at your bench and thinking, who can come on and get me a goal? When the three aren't doing it, and it does feel like we need something as an attacker, but I wouldn't want us to go mad. I don't think we need to, you know, I don't think for a host of reasons they wouldn't do an Mbappe anyway for wages, but someone that Liverpool have proven really good at signing players who want to prove themselves.
But when you say you don't want them to go mad, Jay, you know, let's think through, like, they have to think through here. Like, I'd love Sarr. I've used him as a hypothetical because I think he's great. I think he showed it last season in the Championship. And you can say it's just the Championship, but he outperforms Elliott. We're using Elliott at the minute. But there's something else here where I think one of the, a good marker for a player is when the expectation is you've got to win, which is where Watford were, who stands up on his counters, and Ismaïla Sarr did. You know, I think that's a valuable and a good thing. And I'd love them to do Sarr. But if I'm Watford, I'm not accepting 60 million.
No.
And I think that's the when you say you don't want them to go mad, I'm a bit like, so what's going mad? Just as far as you're concerned, what's going
so
mad?
So I think you're looking at, you've got to spend, I agree with you on what Watford will say on Sarr, but I think that might change if, say, it was to be Sarr. I think, you know, what a club says they want and will pay early on is not, means absolutely not in a negotiation, but I think it's a 40, 50 million pound player. I think that's what you're looking at. That's Liverpool's level of a player. I think it's a step up from to spending 30 odd million on Salah, you know, with inflation and stuff like that. It's the Fabinho level player. It's someone who might come in and want to prove themselves. It's 50 million.
I'll be surprised if they do that now. 50, 60 million on a player this late in the window. I think if they were going to do it, they'd have done it by now. I think, you know, you talk about Sarr there, you know, what are Watford doing with 50, 60 million quid?
That's my thing, and that's what Watford are able to say.
What are they doing?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I mean? I think for Sarr, and Sarr isn't my name on this, but I think, no. I think you're right.
It was your name, not of interest.
I genuinely haven't got one, but I do think we need something like that. And I'd be hard pressed to think they aren't looking at other leagues and thinking there's a player they can come in and bring in and improve. But I think I also wonder how much of this is Liverpool thinking we're not going to sign him and then prove that we want to get rid of players. I wouldn't be surprised if we're still thinking we can get Origi out on loan, we can get Minamino sold to Southampton for 15, 20 million, something like that. And Liverpool are thinking, can we get these players out the door and do this last minute? Have we got this ready? Just in case things work for us.
I think we probably will shift one or two, maybe on deadline day. You know, you'd worry about Origi going now. It just seems to be no takers for him at all. And, you know,
I think he's possibly the biggest issue with
and he might be. But Phil, listen, you know, given what we've seen from him in the last 18 months,
I agree completely.
They ain't queuing around the block for him, hardly, let's be honest. Absolutely. And it isn't going to be a fee that maybe you would have got for him, you know, 18 months, 2 years ago. But listen, we are where we are with that. But yeah, I just worry now that they're not going to do anything significant. They might get someone in, but then you've got to think, well, is it going to be the right level of signing now, because it is quite late? And, you know, if you're a selling club now, you know, back to the Sarr thing, you know, Watford have got their job is to stay in the league. If they fucking sell someone like him now, that massively compromises that. So it feels quite late, unless all the stars align. And, you know, we know transfers aren't just done, you know, on a whim, especially Liverpool. It's planned. It's usually planned over a number of years, you would suggest, given the kind of things you hear. So I'm just starting to be a little bit concerned now that they're going to have to just go with what they've got. And that would massively concern me. And I think it would be a big mistake as well. And I've said it before, I think this manager...
It applies loads of pressure to them.
Jay, I just think this man, and listen, I get the wage building. I understand that, and people can come back and say, yeah, the wages and all that. I understand that's a thing. I do. And I'm not asking for Mbappe, by the way.
No,
and I don't think many people are.
I'd ask, like, for them. Yeah, you know what I mean? I'd ask, like, but I wouldn't. I don't think Father Christmas is bringing them anytime soon.
I think most people are looking at, if it was someone 40, 50 million quid, they'd be fucking made up. They'd take that. If it was of a certain level.
It's the message it sends. I think this is my point about supporters. I think it's the message it sends that Liverpool will compete, because we would largely, I know we've signed Kanate, but you'd look at the two centre-halves now and go, well, they're our first choice and Gomez is next anyway, and Kanate's got to come in and prove a point here. I reckon people are looking at this thinking, I want us to just be signing players, like all rivals are signing players, and then because if it's something happens and someone gets injured, it bites you on the backside. But just on your point, also plan. I agree with you, Liverpool will have plans for this. I just find it odd to think that Liverpool aren't thinking we've got to replace one of the three soon. That we've got to have a plan. Not maybe not this season. Maybe it's but certainly by next season, one of the three. And when I say three, I mean Firmino, Salah, Mane, Jota comes into that, and he's like kind of maybe accelerated a tiny bit for them, but they're surely thinking one of them's got to change.
In general, that's my missed opportunity with the window. What I wanted them to do a bit more in general is that there is an issue around the age of the squad, and it's not going to hit us this year. And I want to be really, I don't think it is going to hit us this year. And I think if we didn't do anyone, I think anyone we do now, I don't think it makes us any markedly more likely to do a league and European Cup double. I don't think it does. I genuinely don't think it makes us markedly more likely. But I'm just sort of thinking you're going to end up in a situation where you're going to have a lot of work to do quite quickly.
Yeah.
And that there's a lot then that can go wrong in that. And also, you've got to allow the wiggle room of, you know, I'll keep using Saar as an example. Let's say you buy Saar. You've always wanted Saar. You've got your eye on him for next summer, but he comes and he's just not a good fit.
Yeah.
That gives you the room for manoeuvre of then next summer moving him on and saying that this just hasn't worked out, and that's fine. But you can
sign someone else next year. Yeah. Rather than thinking Saar next summer and it doesn't work.
Yeah, you can get your mistake in a year early, and my worry with them is...
Can I say on the mistake, the thing with Saar and declaring him a mistake, how much opportunity would he have to prove over the course of this season whether he would be a mistake or not?
Well, I'm almost talking here, Phil, like almost as a cultural fit.
Okay, fair.
You know, the idea that at some point, and I think it might have happened, and we've sort of styled it out a couple of times, I think at some point, you know, the hit rate on the transfers, I think, is really strong. Like, it's as good as anybody, yeah. And you've got to respect them for that. And it's all the research and the diligence and the time they take. But at some point, you're going to just buy someone and he's just going to be a bit of a prick. Or he's just going to not fit. Or he's not going to like Liverpool. He's not going to like the surrounding areas. And at some point, you're going to get one of them. And my point is, allowing a bit of contingency. I don't want them to do a summer where they do six.
I don't think
I just quite like them to do two or three every summer. Yeah. And at the minute, they've only done one.
Yeah. And let me be clear on this. You know, my expectations have been managed now. Where I'll happily take one because this is where we are in the window. But I wanted two. I wanted two more. I think they've left it to chance now, where there's a number of people, even on that bench yesterday, who were good footballers, but they've got such a bad history with injuries that you are relying heavily on luck now and for things, because squads get injuries, it's going to happen. But you then rely on lads who are your backup to be fit and ready, and I'm not convinced we've got that, and that's where I'm starting.
I think Elliot's fucked us on this though, Ian, because I wanted another midfielder, but I think you get to the point where there actually aren't enough games to go around. You're not far away from that.
But they're not at the moment. But Liverpool have got to be an elite level club, has got to give you those problems that not all these lads can get games, and you've got to say to some of the muscles, lads, you're just not playing, mate, and you're not getting games, and I'm going to move you on. What Liverpool aren't great at, and we've praised this a lot, but there's some of those players you think, if someone come in for Chamberlain, if someone come in for Keita, I'd imagine, I'd hope Liverpool had someone better they wanted, they just needed the Keita money, and they were ready to move them on. They were ready to shift them on, and I just don't think them level of players were able to shift on.
I take the point here about the kind of fixtures stuff, but when you do look at the fixture list now, when those Champions League ones drop in and it's three games a week, you think, fuck me, that's a lot of games they've got to play.
Yeah, but you do the maths on it, yeah. Genuinely, you do the maths on it. If Fabinho starts 35, Henderson and Thiago each start about 27, there's fuck all games left. Out of 50, if you get to the Champions League final, it's 51 Premier League and Champions League games. Once you do that, you know, genuinely, if those three all just get that level, then you're allowing Keita, Jones and Chamberlain 19 each.
Milner's... Jones isn't even in the squad yesterday, is he?
Milner's five, and I've not counted for Elliot there, and that's all the appearances. I've just done all the appearances that they can get if they play 4-3-3. Every game.
But you change that if you're looking at saying, well, okay, we're not able to sign a three, anyone in the front three, so, you know, Elliot.
So are we Elliot, exactly.
And do you move Jones into there for some games? Does Jones play there in cup games?
But that's why I'd rather just go. Elliot's now made the point, he's now the eighth midfielder. That's it, that's all sound. If we're going to do that, then that's fine. Go and buy a fucking someone who plays in the front three. Go and buy someone who then is your Ibn Jotter, your next one's down, and then you're able to say, well, we're stocked. And you can make the, and if you get screwed in midfield, we all learn our lesson and we go from there, because you can't trust this lad, you can't trust this lad. I think though, on your point about them selling, Jay, just to come back to you on it, I think part of the problem though is the manager's not prepared. If someone's putting it in, if they're all putting it in training, he's not making a show of anyone.
No.
So the nearest he's got to that is Origi, who's not made a match day squad yet, I don't think. Is that right, Phil?
He's been on the bench. I think he was on the bench last week, wasn't he?
Was he? So he's made one match.
He was on the bench in Norwich.
So the nearest we've got to it is Origi to me. Like, he's been coming off the bench in friendlies and all of that sort of stuff, I think, to make the point. But I think the manager's attitude is, if they're putting it in training, he's not going to have anyone. He's not going to send anyone off to go and train with the kids to make a point to say, we want rid of you. Because that's not the environment he has.
No, but I think there's a point of saying is that we're stocked with midfield options, but I can't see us being able to shift any of them for a fee or a sale anytime soon. I think Fabinho may be a side, there's not many of them we're shifting on for a fee, but even then, some of them are likely to move on sooner rather than later. Milner, after another season, is
gone for certain.
Henderson's going to be playing, Fabinho's going to be playing, but Keita might think, I want to be playing a bit more regular football if I'm not getting that game anymore. So I think there's a chance some of them go and you just haven't brought someone, and it just would amaze me that Liverpool haven't got someone in mind. What's more concerning on some of this is there isn't even much talk about why we are or aren't interested in players. So there's one big attacker you know, seemingly left available on the market and still could be fairly cheap, and that's Haaland. And there's lots of reasons why I imagine Liverpool wouldn't sign Haaland, not least his agent and all of the demands they might instill on Liverpool. But Liverpool aren't even like briefing about why we couldn't make Haaland work. And that just creates, I think, a mindset of like, what level are we competing at? And why are we not competing at those same level of our rivals? And we know lots of the reasons, but Liverpool aren't even managing expectations. It just leaves this void, which I think is being filled by us talking about stuff like this, potentially.
I think if we go back to January, it's just the whole, oh, we're not signing a centre-back, we're not signing a centre-back, and then you get Kabak on loan. Part of the thing was that they were signing Kanate this summer. So if they've got a thought process about what they're doing in next summer, and I know it's like all people saying, oh, you know, they always say next summer and et cetera, et cetera. But if you've got a long-term plan, which we are ran sort of not thinking about, right, what we need to do this window, they're also thinking about what we need to do next, if we need anything in January, if we need next summer, and possibly even further into the future. So if you're looking at, we sign this wide attacker now, or we sign a striker now, you might want a different flair next summer that you know you can get next summer. And that signing this player now might mean you don't get that player, and in 2 years' time you don't look.
That's fair enough. So Chelsea had this, didn't they? I read the thing. Chelsea had this with Lukaku. Mm. They want the Haaland next summer, and does that change things? And partly they're thinking with Tuchel is, well, I might not even be here next summer. But that, so what that
might also, like City were in for Ronaldo, for example, because they knew he could do it for a year.
Yeah, for a year. But I this is not me like kind of being down on Liverpool. And I just think it creates a mood with fans, and I do think the danger is, you know, first of September,
fans,
you know,
one of them gets the club see these things differently, don't you? So it's never gonna marry up, but, and that's a really big problem in terms of how two parties are seeing the same thing from a completely different point of view.
Don't get me wrong, you know, if I'm putting my chips anyway, I'm putting on a forward, and I do take Neil's point about the midfield, but my issue's more, it's back to that succession piece that you've just mentioned. You know, there's players there. I mean, Henderson's, what is he, 31? Milner's going to leave the club. I just think you need, I don't know what the future holds for Keita and Chamberlain, because I think it's fair to say, whilst talented, they've never convinced. So for me, it would have made sense to bring a midfielder in as well. And even if it is not loads of games, maybe you've got to have that conversation, maybe you've got to manage expectations and say who you bring
year
in.
Year two's going to be big for you, year three's going
to
be
big for you, you're learning off that's these guys. Yeah. So that's where I'm coming at it from. It's not necessarily you have to come in now and play 30, 40 games. And yeah, you've got to do a bit of a selling piece to the player.
But you get to say, look at Andy Robertson, look at Fabinho, he don't play much for the first half of the season. You're coming in second half of the season, and then you go from there.
Put them in front of Jurgen Klopp, and you know, it would take a certain person to refuse that opportunity because he's that good and people want to play for him. And that's where I'm coming at it from. And I think, you know, now it is about, for me, they've got to do something, I think, to give this manager the best opportunity. I'm not saying they can't challenge without another player, but I do think you are relying heavily now on luck to get through a season without adding at least one more.
I think on the attacker point, Phil, and I think that part of the thing is that when they change it, so to talk about the succession plan and thing, I think when they change the marker for that, the starter place still up for me will be when Firmino goes. So for instance, that's where it all fits and it all glues. But when they change it, I think it is going to be quite marked. The one thing I would say is lads who get on the outside and lots of pace and can beat a man never go out of fashion. And that's why, you know, it might be that someone might not fit in a while, but then if they've done the job in the meantime for Liverpool, you will find a selling club. I mean, and maybe I'm wrong and maybe I'm not on top of how the transfer market's going to evolve, and they are, and there's literally people's jobs to sort of predict the future in this. So maybe my sort of Alex Ferguson line of you can every summer you can buy a winger because you can always sell a winger, which was genuinely what Ferguson said and what he did. Maybe that's wrong now. Maybe I am outdated in that. Maybe, you know, the idea of there being a lot of clubs like Aston Villa you can sell people onto, maybe that we've got to acknowledge that that's not really difficult. So it makes it harder to make the first step. If you're a club like Liverpool, everyone, all the big clubs have got players they're still trying to get rid of. But it's not going to be pandemic world forever as well. I don't know. I just think if you get someone in who can carry the ball with pace and is able to get double figures, well, guess what? You'll sell that player if you decide you're going to do it differently.
And it comes back to what I was saying a couple of minutes ago. How easy is it to get that player? It's a really, really tough balancing act, I think. But one also thing that you talked to me a few minutes ago about the success rate of our transfers. One of the reasons our transfers are so successful is because we don't sign players just for the sake of signing players. It's why the whole thing is just, it's not as simple as opening like a database and going, cost.
This Phil's membership of FSG out cancelled.
It's going to kill him. It's going to kill him.
Wait till it's on the internet.
Stickers about Phil.
Stickers about Phil.
Stickers about Phil.
Cancelled Phil.
Thank you very much to Jay McKenna, to Phil Blundell, to Ian Ryan. It's been the Anfield Wrap. Sports Social Podcast Network.